What's your assessment first?
There has been some progress, but certainly we would have liked to have seen more, and I certainly think the people of South Sudan would have liked to have seen more progress. One of the reasons that the three Troika envoys are here in Juba this week, our Norwegian colleague Endre Stiansen is also with us, and this is the first time we've had the three envoys here in Juba since 2017, and we're all here to speak with the government, to speak with a number of people across the across Juba who are interested in this, and to see if there is anything that we can be doing and that can be done by the powers that be to increase the implementation rate, because the implementation is the most important thing. That's what will bring the peace and stability to South Sudan. So our message this week has very much been, can you all work together to increase the speed of the implementation? Because, as I say, that's what will bring the peace, stability, and then from that, all the other good things that can flow from there being no violence across the country.
All right. And Stuart, what's your assessment?
So I think a question that every single person in South Sudan and your neighbors and people all across the world are asking is, how do the people of South Sudan and their leaders right now make sure that the violence that this peace agreement was meant to stop actually works? And we always think of this as the responsibility of leaders, and it is. Every leader needs to make responsible decisions and take responsible actions. But making sure that the terms of the peace agreement are fully implemented, and making sure that those who didn't sign the peace agreement but who did solemnly sign and affirm the ceasefire all observe that. That business is not just the business of the people at the top, but it's the business of every leader in every village and every member who might have once carried a gun. And then there's something else. All the problems of South Sudan are not political. Many of them are fundamentally and have always been economic. You know, there's a lot of talk on the outside and even inside South Sudan about what a resource-rich country your country is. And for all of you out there, I hope you recognize, as we do, that South Sudan is a resource-rich country, and its greatest resource is you. It's the people of South Sudan. So now's the time, just about 2 years on from the signing of the revitalized agreement, for the people of South Sudan to come together, every woman and every man, and make sure that they move forward together. For me, the three critical elements right now are, number one, stop violence, especially violence against innocent women and children, but violence as a whole, right now. And then the second thing is, make those decisions to move forward that are necessary so that this government and this country can move from setting up a government to actually governing, remembering always that governing is a two-way street. It's a relationship of mutual trust and responsibility between citizens and leaders. And if you don't have the trust, you've got to build it. And you do that by doing one good decision and one good action at a time. So while there are immense challenges, when you think how far the idea of freedom for South Sudan has come, you've come a long way. And I would add one other thing, that just last week, South Sudan and your leaders provided a platform for peace talks for Sudan. What a wonderful image that South Sudan can become not just a country with challenges, but a country helping other countries resolve their challenges. And now the question is, having moved forward the peace in Sudan, how do you, together, every one of you, fully implement the peace in South Sudan?
Great. Yes, we'll get back to you. And let's go to Bob. Bob, earlier you did mention that this is the first time that the three envoys are in the country since 2007. Particularly, what's your mission? Why are you here? And what could you like to achieve after this particular visit?
Okay, thank you. Since 2017. Given that we're in a COVID-restricted world and all our jobs as envoys would normally involve a lot of travel, and certainly we would have been here sooner if it had not been for COVID.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunity arose that we could all come to Juba. And as they say, the stars aligned and the three of us found ourselves able to come. And given that there has been an increase in the reporting of violence across the country, there was also no concerns with regards to the flooding, with regards to access for humanitarians. We really felt this was a good opportunity to come, and you can do so much over the phone and over WhatsApp and over team calls, which mm-hmm. we've all got used to in the last sort of 6-7 months. But at times it's very important that you're sitting down with in our case, we've met the President, we've met the First Vice President, we've met the Vice President.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good to sit down and talk with them and highlight the concerns, highlight what we've been hearing as well. We Stuart and I were up in Ye on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And to ask them how they plan to work together to find solutions to their problems. Now, it's not the role of envoys, and it's certainly never been the role of the Troika,
mm-hmm.
to tell people what to do. We can listen, we can give advice, we can act as a conduit between different parties. This week we've been, and I've been active in reaching out to Thomas Cirillo.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we can do. We can give assistance, we can listen, we can help. So it's been good to hear some of the concerns, to probe, to ask some questions. We know there are some big issues which have been unresolved. We know that there's some issues which are causing delays. And really, our job this week has been to, as I say, to listen and to press for solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's one thing an envoy tries to do, probably the word that most people have heard more often in our meetings this week is, but what's the solution? How are you going to find the solution?
Mm-hmm. You said you spoke to Thomas Cirillo, one of the leaders who haven't signed the revitalized peace agreement. And yes, over the few months we've had and seen some few attacks happening in some parts of the country. What did he tell you?
I'll not go into details on everything that he told me, but the message from us to him is clear. As Stuart has just said, the people of South Sudan, and this has been a consistent message every time I visited and every time I speak to the diaspora in the UK and wider, is people want an end to the violence. That is what the people of South Sudan want. They've had many years since the country gained independence where the end to violence has been within touching distance, and just as they've touched it, something has gone wrong. And people want an end to that violence. And when you see this uptick, when you see attacks beginning again, people are saying, please put your guns down, get back to the negotiating table. And this has been very much my discussion with Thomas over the last couple of days.
Yes.
And let me jump in on
please.
That and just say
please.
That one of the things that I love about this country of yours, for all of you, is that the spirit expressed in those who said, not just we want an end to violence and we want peace this time to last, or to create peace in places where there's still great suffering, including from natural disasters. But what I truly love is that people then take the next step and they say, we want to raise our cattle in peace again. Mm. We want to grow our crops and be able to both sow them and harvest them and enjoy the fruit of that harvest ourselves. This is a nation of incredibly resilient people from every walk of life, of extraordinary women and remarkable men. And they all seek, once again, to literally be able to build the future of this nation and their own personal prosperity together. But our call is for everyone in this country, for every young person who may today, instead of working in the fields or in a business or as a livestock raiser, for every single person to say, now's the time, and to send a consistent signal that doesn't just say to others, do it, but that in those wonderful words of President Kennedy a long time ago, who said, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Now is the time for every South Sudanese person to rise up together and to work together, knowing that all of the humanitarian assistance in the world, all of the gifts in the world, are not as great as the gift of peace and the fruits of the labor of the people of this place. You have now given, you South Sudanese people and leaders, have now given the people of Sudan new hope for peace to end the conflict there. Mm-hmm. What I'd like you to know is that this isn't just about your own prosperity, although I'm quite sure that your prosperity is uppermost in the minds of many who today are suffering because of flooding and other natural disasters. Mm-hmm. But in addition to your prosperity, this is a country that can have a remarkable influence, not just on the future of this land and your neighbor, but the whole world. For far too long, people have looked to this part of the world and seen challenges, problems, or suffering. And now's the time for them to look here and see the promise of peace.
All right. And you have spoken, you've met the president, you met the vice president, as you said earlier. From your conversations with, what's your impression after the conversation when it comes to the implementation of the peace agreement, the full implementation of the revitalized peace agreement? What have you discussed, if you could, if you don't mind sharing with the public?
So I think the most important part of our discussions has been this. For these last few months, much of the focus, the public focus, has been on fully implementing the remaining parts of the government. So, for example, appointing all the governors in a way that reflects the agreement and the kind of collegial governance that is so essential, and also moving on to dissolve the old and set up the new legislature and appoint state and local officials. So the focus of many has been on that, and that is absolutely essential. But I think what many people don't know, and what we're privileged to know, is that at the same time, in the clusters of government, there has been a collegial coming together to address some of the major challenges that the whole world faces, as well as this country, such as COVID. So our focus has been encouraging, actually underscoring that the responsibility of leadership is to make difficult and wise decisions, listen to your people and move forward. But now's the time to finish the job of setting up this government and, of course, then to govern. And this will not happen if it is a one-way street. It needs to be collegial. It needs to be united, and it needs to be supported by the people. And I find, Bob, I don't know whether or not you had the same strong impression that I did, but I found widespread among the leaders and the people of this country unanimity on what's important.
No, I absolutely agree, Stuart. And I think just adding to this is, as Stuart says about leadership, a responsibility comes with leadership. Part of that responsibility, and it's not unique in South Sudan. In both the US and the UK, people within our cabinets will disagree on issues. That's natural. It's a natural part of any part of your life. We disagree with our partners, our spouses, our children. But what you need to do is to find a way to get over these disagreements, to compromise, to find a way forward. And I think with the coming together of the unity government, I think it's maybe taken just a little bit longer in some instances for them to get to that point where they realise that a collective decision needs to be taken. Mm-hmm. But as Stuart says, I have been struck this visit that there seems to be this changing feeling from when you speak to people that this is beginning to happen, and a bit more of an understanding on the need why this needs to happen. Mm-hmm. We're not there yet. There's a long way to go. There'll be many more hurdles, and there'll be many more bumps in the road. But there does seem to be this. You do sense it, as Stuart says, that there is more of a unity. There is more of a feeling of unity.
Yes.
While acknowledging the major problems that still need to be tackled.
Yep. Yes, and that's what was coming to us. Like, after speaking to these leaders, the vice president, the first vice president, and the other leaders that you spoke to, when it comes to issues of like the reconstituted, parliament, legislature, and like some states right now don't even have a governor, Upper Nile, for example, has there been any promise of resolving this issue as soon as it can be?
Well, the good news is that there's only one state left. And in American football, we have a field that's 100 yards long. So we're now 9/10 of the way to the goal. And it is absolutely time to move forward, because every state needs to have leadership. But it's also crucial that that be done right and be done now. And that's because the process that's brought us here has been one that's focused on bringing the nation together and taking responsible decisions. And that means that while it is important and has been important to move quickly, it's also been important to move in the right direction. I think that South Sudan, both its leaders and its people, have concluded that now's the time to make those final decisions, and I very much hope that they will. I think that the next point, though, and the one that people don't often get to, is this. I met some people whose family farm for a living, and they said that they had produced remarkable quantities of grain for this whole country in the past. But because of conflict and uncertainty and then locusts and floods, they hadn't been able to plant lately. And when people brought to them sometimes meager quantities of help in the form of a bag of grain or something to help them, these people, instead of just taking it for themselves, shared that small quantity with not their own family alone, but with their neighboring family. And then they looked at the people that brought us and said, please let everyone know that what we really want is to be able to raise this grain again ourselves. I think that's where people are. They know that the dividend of peace is the prosperity that each of us can make, and they seek that very strongly right now.
All right, but let's look at some of the, when we talk about the assessment of the peace agreement, the River Talas peace agreement, we have seen some of the things that have been done. Of course, the 9 governors have been appointed, and the government is trying to, much as it's not fully, but they seem to be a government. Now, to you, what do you think the parties need to do right now, going forward, and you know, yeah, basically, what do you want to see the parties do right now?
I think, as Stuart has said, we need to see all the governors appointed. We need to see the government being formed. We need to see the government beginning to function as a normal government, making decisions, tackling the problems. And just really going back, in terms of what we've heard, not only this trip, but previous trips, there is a very, very consistent message from everybody we have spoken to. And that is peace. We want peace. We want stability. So what the government should be doing is then looking at how to ensure you secure that. And, to implement the peace. It's all well and good signing bits of paper, mm-hmm. but you then need to implement. So it's that. Alongside that, you then get the stability of the country. That allows you to then begin to address the economic issues. With that as well is, let's be honest, there with all the problems there has been, and this is not a case of finger-pointing at anybody, mm-hmm. There is probably an expectation gap. And the people of South Sudan have expectations. Right, I don't like using the phrase, but it's the oft-used phrase is the peace dividend. Mm-hmm. What is the peace dividend for the people? And the people we've spoken to, it's that way of, as Stuart says, being allowed to live their lives, being allowed to do what they used to do, be they agriculturalists, pastoralists, or people living in the city here. No, get on with their lives in peace, in harmony. And as one lady who I spoke to the other day said, you know, what I don't want is to be worried when I get up, my children go away. Are my children going to come back when she leaves the house, mm-hmm. to go? Is there going to be anything for her to buy? Is she going to have money to buy things? Is she going to be safe, you know, leaving the house? Mm-hmm. And then when she comes home in the evening, is her house going to be there? And those are the fundamental issues.
And Rob, then, if I could just jump in on this. He used the pronoun she a couple of times in that sentence. One of the other remarkable challenges and opportunities for this country is it's not every country in the world that says 35% of our leaders should be women. Mm-hmm. I know in my family, more than 50% of the leadership comes from the women in my family, from my mother and from my wife and from my daughter. And it's true in South Sudan. When I talk about South Sudan's greatest resource being her people, mm-hmm. I mean that both figuratively and literally. And so continuing to include not just all the political parties, but all the women and all the men in leadership positions. Actually, it is to recognize in public the leadership we all know that women exercise in our hearts, mm-hmm. and in our consciences and in our homes and in our offices and in places of worship and amusement and joy. I would just add this, though, that the real question that faces us now is how do we get from, no, how do you, the people of South Sudan, get from where you are to where you need to go? And trust, not only between the government and the citizens, but trust between you is something that can take a long time to rebuild, mm-hmm. when somebody breaks it. So acts of violence against women and children, against each other, each one of those tears at the fabric of South Sudan. So I urge very much people to take responsibility, because as we've often said, people who do things that are wrong will be held accountable for those things, first by God and by their own consciences, and then by their country and their neighbors and others. But in the process of doing things that are violent or wrong, each person sacrifices the kind of trust and the peace that's necessary to move the country forward.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the protocols in the peace agreement, which have not been completely implemented, and that includes the security arrangements. And if you talk to many government officials, they have cited, you know, the lack of financial ability to to resolve those particular protocols and all that. So when you are talking to these leaders, did they mention about this financial gap? And if they do, what's your position here?
Of course, we fully understand the economic situation that the country is in. What we have been asking, and we've pressed for before, is, as Stuart said earlier, South Sudan is the potential to be a rich country. It has lots of natural resources. It has oil, and as we've said, it has a fantastic population, and a population which, every time we speak to people, wants to work, wants to do things, wants to get on. Mm-hmm. So, what we have been asking is, we have been advised that this is happening, is in that, with the formation of the unity government, the various ministries are looking at income streams, etc., the money, what money is available. And by doing that, you then begin to identify where there may be money that can be used. And of course, again, with the formation of a government, you end up, as things begin to trickle down, mm-hmm. you begin to then reform parts and sectors, the revenue collecting parts of your ministries. And then they begin to identify where there is money, where money that maybe taxes should be collected on is not being collected, etc. So that's the way that South Sudan needs. And again, this is the responsibility of the government and the governors. Mm-hmm. And certainly ahead of the formation of the government, when we've spoken to various leaders, we have said to them, it's always easy on the outside to criticise and to say, when you come in, part of the responsibility is to then say, okay, here is how I will run my ministry, here is what we will do, we will open the books, etc. So it's very much a case of let South Sudan become, in the terms of its finances, very transparent. Let's have South Sudan as a transparent country.
This is an incredibly important point. And I just, to your question about investing in those
protocols,
in the transformation of or the reform of the security sector, this is too important. The price of doing it is low compared to the price of not doing it. So you're absolutely right to focus on it. It's essential that move forward. I know that there are people, for example, who have been in training at Unified Force. I think it's essential, and I fully expect, because I think other people and the leaders and the people of South Sudan are ready for this, that move forward, and I'm very hopeful that it will. Mm-hmm. But I would add on the issue of transparency, mm-hmm. there is an effort underway by this government, and it is one that is welcomed not just by those of us from other countries, but truly by the people of South Sudan. There's an effort underway to make sure that public financial management is done in a way that is transparent, and that people account for what comes in and what goes out, so that people have clarity. I think that the fundamental missing piece in many places where there is disquiet or unease is the lack of trust. And trust thrives where there is openness and information. So I think that of all the things that are being done now, perhaps one of the very most important is not just to count, but to account and to recount, to have everyone see what is there. The fact is that today, this country, while it has great resources, needs to find a way to produce more assets and then more income for governance. There is a remarkable deficit of both social infrastructure and physical infrastructure, and that got worse last night with the rain in other places. And so no thing, it's interesting, it's a combination of financial credit and then intellectual credit or political credit, and the two have to go together. But thanks for flagging that, the importance of that area.
Mm-hmm. Now, with your coming and talking to these leaders and trying, whatever great intention you have to talk to these leaders to implement this peace agreement, eventually you will go, it will be left with them to implement it. Now, if that does not happen as it is, are there consequences apart from just talking to people like, you know what, you need to do this? And well, they can hear you, but the role of implementation sometimes
thing that I think it's important to know, in several of our conversations, Norwegian special envoy, whose name is Endre Stensen, noted that he had been here 20 years ago. And others noted how often Bob and his predecessors and others of the Troika and all of our countries, how long we have been friends of the Sudanese people and working closely here. Our investment in the future of South Sudan will continue. And the notion that we'll come and go as individuals, of course, we change. But as countries and as nations and as peoples, our friendship isn't going anywhere.
Bob, you'd like to add something on that?
No, I fully agree. You know, we're fully committed, and we know that change takes time. We know this. What we hope, and as we were saying at the beginning, is there has been a slow implementation. That's acknowledged by everybody. Stuart, I don't think we've met anybody who has not accepted that things should have been quicker. And you hope, and we hope, that with some of these big decisions that hopefully will be taken very soon, that will then allow the formation of the government, and then will allow an increased implementation.
Great.
But you're right on this issue of consequences. That's what I mentioned before. When people take responsible decisions and make responsible actions, they're lifted up by all those around them who recognize what they've done. And when they don't, people hold them responsible. And, there have been people who have acted in ways, despite all the efforts of everyone else, to create violence or to spoil the process. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite sure that the people of South Sudan will lead in holding those people responsible. Mm-hmm. They have a better sense of who's helping and who's not than anyone else. But I think the critical thing to focus on today is what's the way forward and how to get there. Mm-hmm. And also the notion, for example, for all those supporters of people who did not sign the peace agreement, now is the time to move forward in the conversation in Rome to honor the ceasefire pledge that was made in front of the leaders of millions of faithful people, including His Holiness and the Archbishop. Now is the time for peace and for a continuation of this extraordinary progress of the last few years, moving South Sudan from a place with nothing but bad news to a place with, as I mentioned last week, a place of peace for the region and the world.
Yeah. And just really to add to that, as the Troika has been with South Sudan for a long time, we will stay with South Sudan. Certainly, I hope that people realise we are a friend. We have the good of South Sudan in our hearts. And as a good friend, we will give praise when praise is due, which we did this week with the convening of the Sudan talks and the very positive results from that. But also as a good friend, we will call out when we think things need to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always been the way that we'll work as a friend. And if things are not going so well, you always want your best friend to maybe tap you on the shoulder and say, "Hold on a second, don't think that's the right route to take."
Mm-hmm.
And we will continue to do that. I think as we said, one of the encouraging things of this week has been the way that when we have raised issues, we have pointed, you know, the increased momentum, the need to stop the violence, as Stuart's mentioned, the Rome process. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, the need to ensure that, you know, that is used by all the parties. Mm-hmm. You know, we have really had good conversations this week. We've had good exchanges.
And not just good conversations with leaders, but good conversations with people. We've met with groups of youth, with mm-hmm. groups of women, with groups of religious leaders.
Yeah, civil society.
And in every conversation, it turns on this. You know, the notion of what if is about, it's not just about justice. It's also about fairness and dispute resolution. Mm-hmm. One of the extraordinarily important things is that when there are small economic disputes, for example, or grave ones, that those people face justice here. I heard with very great interest that just the other day in Ye, people who had lost their way and done wrong had been held to account.
Yes.
I think that it's part of the revitalized agreement, too. That sort of notion of honest, fair South Sudanese resolution of disputes and accountability here is by far the most important element. It's also a reflection of this great truth that, again, the people of South Sudan are this country's greatest resource, not the oil. The oil is an enabler. But the magnitude of the challenges that this nation faces, a nation of 12 or 13 million people, mm-hmm. cannot be resolved by the flow of a couple hundred thousand barrels of oil a day. When you divide that by 12 million, that's not much of a quantity mm-hmm. to live on. But in fact, you don't have to, because this nation has tremendous productive potential, mm-hmm. and in fact has tremendous production. People often ask, when will foreign investment come and make some of those other industries succeed? And the answer is, first, it's been here for a long time. But second, when the people of South Sudan feel confident, again, in investing their seed in the land or in buying a young calf and growing it and growing the herd or doing the other work, when these things happen, the rest of the world, the rest of the region first, and the rest of the world will take note. So mm-hmm. creating a climate conducive to people, to life, to security, and to investment by the people of South Sudan will open the door to make this what, for many countries, is a metaphor, but in this country is true, a land of milk and honey.
Indeed.
And actually, sorry, yes, you know, just to follow on. And one of the things as well that struck us in many of the conversations is the way forward, as Stuart is setting out. There are many steps that can be taken, and you mentioned yourself one of the questions, the need for money, finance. Mm-hmm. But many of the things that can happen do not need money.
Mm-hmm.
No, the court case, holding people to account. Okay, you're setting up a court, but mm-hmm. that's not. Keeping the roads open and clear, so that, you know, the various groups and people respecting the ceasefire, allowing the humanitarian corridors,
yep.
That doesn't cost anything. No, allowing transparency, opening up the books, mm-hmm. doesn't cost anything. So there are certainly things that can be done, and we know I'm not being naive, because the country needs a vibrant economy. It needs to be able to pay people, it needs to be able to buy goods. But there are things, there are small steps that can be done which help with that trust, mm-hmm. that can be done, that do not cost a lot of money.
Great. Just before I let you go, let's talk about the agreement was signed 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And up to now, it seems like they're still renegotiating some of what they already agreed on. Now, when it comes to the ease of moving forward and how this agreement can be implemented. Let's look at the role of the grantors here, like, you know, those like IGAD particularly and the other countries that were grantors of this peace agreement. What should they do to ensure that these leaders implement what they already signed instead of renegotiating what they signed and they want it in their own ways, the way it's going in some of the, you know, implementation process of this particular peace agreement?
So two quick thoughts. The first is it is very important, and this is something that we consistently say, that the revitalized agreement be implemented as it's written. It has both words and a spirit, and we keep stressing that it's important to do both. So any notion of rewriting it or renegotiating it is not one that's consistent with that broader principle. Not just the letter, but also the spirit. The letter is unity. The spirit is us, you, the people of South Sudan. And then as for the guarantors in IGAD, IGAD has played a very significant role in continuing to press, along with some of the instruments that were set up in the revitalized agreement, like RJMAC and others. It is absolutely crucial that those of us from further away work very closely, not just with the people of South Sudan, but with your regional organization, with IGAD, mm-hmm. with your neighbors, especially the guarantors, Uganda and Sudan. Sudan is now the chair of IGAD, so mm-hmm. when working with Sudan, one works with both IGAD and a guarantor. And we are. We will continue to work closely with, but I think that the biggest point here is that the greatest guarantors and the greatest element here are you, the people of South Sudan. This is your agreement, your peace, your future, and you're the ultimate guarantors of the success of this, and it's your desire, not only for peace, but also for fairness and transparency and unity.
All right. Bob, you have something to add?
I was just going to say, and you know, you're the ones that will reap the benefit.
Amen.
That's the thing.
Right.
And that's what we fervently hope, because
right.
as Stuart was saying, it was fantastic to get out of the country and see some of this beautiful country.
All right.
Are really struck by, as Stuart mentioned, you know, how certainly went up to Ye, the opportunities that are there, the drive of the people, and also the courage of the people to just yep. want to move forward. That's what they wanted. They wanted peace. They wanted to live their lives. They wanted to go back to do what their ancestors had done, and they wanted to be self-sufficient. And I think we all owe it to those people to ensure that is what they get.
Great. Special Envoy Bob and Stuart, just before you go, any final remarks that you would like to give to our listeners?
Just two. First, what happens in South Sudan, and to all of you, is truly important for the whole world. This place has been a place of suffering where relief and concern flows in long enough. And now is the time not only for South Sudan to come together to implement the agreement and to take care of each other, but also to become a place that is an exporter of peace. You've done that in some respect last week. That is the exporting grains and cattle and peace is the future of South Sudan. And the other piece is, it's not just your neighbors and this troika of Norway, the United Kingdom, and the United States. It's the whole world that cares about what happens here. And by golly, we'll keep caring. And we'll keep sharing our concern so that together we make a future good for all of us.
Thank you. But
I couldn't have said it better. No, I just hope that every time I visit, I come and see you, mm-hmm. and I hope that in the coming months and years, every time I come, we're able to see some progress. And as Stuart says, as the Troika, as friends of South Sudan, we will continue to do what we can to help. And as I say, I hope that at each step we see a little bit more progress. And no, it's not often you say this, but once South Sudan gets to the point where we're seeing the good governance, we're seeing the economy growing, I will be out of job. And I will never be happier.
Yes, Ambassador Bob and Ambassador Stewart, thank you so much for coming to Mirai Studios. We really do appreciate your time.
No, thank you.